Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, January 8th. I'm Ray Graff. Welcome to the latest edition of the Writers Forum today. We welcome back our longtime favorite novelist and storyteller, Barbara Chepitis. And today, Barbara, well, she brought children, and they're in the studio with us today, but they're not just ordinary kids. No, this is a trio of playwrights from Ad Astra Theater Troupe in Saratoga Springs, and they are here to answer your questions about the process of creative writing. You want to start writing a play, a short story, even a novel, but can't seem to find the words? Are you a writer who is looking to get published and need help? It's the Writers Forum, don't you know? It's 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. You know, someone once said, I don't know, remember who it was the play's the thing. I think it was Charlie Callis. Somebody said that. We have a trio of...
Oh,
that's right. Yes. Wait your turn, and Zach will turn the mic on. Hang on just a minute. We'll do the intro. You know, we'll talk about playwriting today. We have a trio of playwrights from Ad Astra Theater Troupe in Saratoga Springs, and they are here in the studio along with our buddy, novelist, and storyteller, Barbara Chepitis. Barbara, you know, an author of 11 published novels, including The Amber and Feeding Christine, each one based on family history. She's also the author of 2 nonfiction books, Feathers of Hope and Saving Eagle Mitch. She's the founder of the storytelling trio, The Snickering Witches, and teaches writing and public speaking at St. Rose College. Now, Grace Alberti is the founder and executive director of Ad Astra Theater Troupe, a nonprofit student-run theater company beginning its third season. Grace is co-author of the original play Uprising, which debuted last June and toured at Canisius College in Buffalo and at the Park Theater in Glens Falls. Grace has performed in more than 50 theater productions since 2009. She is a senior at Saratoga Springs High School. Actor Patrick Bond is co-author of and will direct the troupe's adaptation of Trojan Women. He is also a senior at Saratoga Springs High School. Katie LaCour is a freshman at Skidmore College, where she studies theater, classics, and vocal performance. Katie is a co-author of Uprising and Trojan Women. She is a founding member of the troupe and has performed in 5 operas at the Glimmerglass Festival. Barbara, Grace, Patrick, and Katie, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Good to be here.
Hi.
Well, we've had fun already getting to know each other here in the lead up to the program. Let's leave the phone number out there if anybody wants to give us a call and learn about playwriting or novel writing or short story writing or poem writing. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Our engineer, Zach, is trying to figure... We're not used to having this many people in the studio. You got all the mics on? Splendid. Before we meet the kids, let's talk to Barbara Chepitis. Barbara, a momentous day here on the show.
Yes, it is.
You have a new workout.
I do. It's actually... it was a collaboration with my dog, Ziggy Stardust.
Oh, yeah.
He wanted to compile a lot of the poems that he's written into a book. And so he has written a book called Doggerel, Poems for Humans and Other Friends.
You want to read one?
I'll read the introduction,
okay,
which is in his voice. I am a dog. When I was a puppy, I ate many books, and some were books of poems. I also ate a few CDs, which were crunchy. That means poems and songs come out of me. Sometimes my humans also write poems and songs by themselves, which is kind of unbelievable. How can they do anything without me? It is just a magic thing they do. I put my poems and songs in this book so other dogs can eat it, and my humans helped because I cannot type. I am a dog.
That's lovely.
I know.
And that book is available, Doggerel is available where?
It's available online at all the usual places.
Okay. Well, that's congratulations
Thank
to you and Ziggy on that.
Yes.
Now, let's meet our playwrights today. Grace Alberti, you seem to have a lot of experience for a rather young person. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
And so tell us about Uprising a little bit.
Okay. So in the summer of last year, I was working at... Was it last year? No.
It was 2017.
Oh, my God. It was 2 years ago.
Well.
I was working, volunteering, as I always do, at my the annual Colony Polish Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a woman there, I think her name was Eva Nobleska, who was doing a presentation on the women of the Warsaw Uprising. And at that time, I was preparing for the second season of Ad Astra, and I was looking for a classical show that I could adapt to something in the World War II lens, because I was really into that at the time.
Yeah. And why?
It's always been something I've been drawn to. I really couldn't tell you. Since I was a little girl, Wikipedia splurges all night long.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Well, I also have family. I'm Polish, and my grandfather fought, and we had family over there as well that we're learning more and more about. But yes, that was how I first found out about it. I tried to originally find a classical play to adapt it to, and I couldn't really find one that I liked. And so Lolly Davidson, who's also a part of the Snickering Witches, I think.
She's been on the show.
Yes.
With me.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. Yep.
She said, how about we just write something together? And so that's what we did.
And I don't understand. Now, you are a senior in high school.
Yes.
And you leap. I mean, you know, I have several children. And they, my youngest daughter was writing poems yesterday. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm. A lot of kids your age, they're not going to leap right into playwriting. How'd you do that?
Well, I had a lot of help. Katie also had joined the project around October,
I think so.
Of that year. And she was my friend of playwriting. She was the one I knew that had actually written shows before. I hadn't ever written anything substantial up to that point. I'd done poetry and I'd done academic writing, but never anything. I'd read plenty of plays,
yeah.
So I understood the structure, and I'd attended a couple workshops, but never anything substantial other than little Grace writing plays based on her children's books.
Oh, that's so cool. Now, Katie LaCour, you are a co-founder of The Troupe, right? And
I mean, I'm a founding member. I've been there since the beginning. I didn't really have...
She did the first show.
Yeah.
I mean, what led you to... Again, every high school has plays, and there are theater groups and after-school things. What led you to this? To founding a theater troupe?
Well, I mean, I've been interested in performing since I was 2 years old, when I fell in love with the Nutcracker. And that was my thing for a long time. And I would like to draw the costumes, and I would make sets out of cardboard, and I would choreograph and dance around my house. And that was just something that I really enjoyed, doing all aspects of the theatrical process. And so to get to actually do that instead of just auditioning as an actor, to get to work on writing and costuming and all the aspects really drew me to Ad Astra.
And you've done 5 operas?
Mm-hmm.
Really? And you're a good singer?
I mean,
she is.
I think so.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
You want to sing something?
No.
Okay, sure enough. We'll move on then. Patrick Bond, you're a co-author, and you will direct. Now, have you directed before?
Minimally, not a large project like this.
Are you scared? Because we've all seen Charlie Brown Christmas Show.
Yes.
Right? And he's got to direct, and things go pretty bad, pretty fast.
I am confident that I will be working with a more dedicated group of people than the Peanuts were. I mean, you know, this is Grace's company. I have Katie here, and we're surrounded by a really strong group of people who are dedicated to Ad Astra.
All right, now when you are directing, is this your first time directing?
Yes.
What are you trying to, in other words, how much direction will you be giving your actors without becoming a tyrant? Otto Preminger, for instance.
I mean, what I love about theater as opposed to other art forms is that it has a very specific kind of collaboration. I think most kinds of art forms, when you have certain kind of contrast and conflict and collaboration, it can create a stronger product since it's a group of many minds. My hope in directing Trojan Women is really to kind of facilitate and organize all of the great minds that are going to be involved in the process.
Go ahead. I just want to stop you there. Now, Trojan Women, you wrote with Katie, right?
Yes.
You're directing.
I am.
Is Katie going to step up and say, well, you know, that's not what I meant.
I'm depending on it.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would you say that?
Anyone who can push against me is doing the right thing, because that'll challenge me to, you know, bring really what the show needs. Katie's input, she's been with me almost the whole time writing it, and I absolutely value what she has to say. Any actor that says, I don't feel that's quite right what you're saying, as long as that can be entertained, we should go into it.
But you still get the ultimate call.
I suppose so.
Oh, I can't wait to see how this plays out.
That's always one of the most interesting points about collaboration. Who gets the final call?
Yeah.
You know, when my husband and I collaborate, usually one of us brings the idea to the table, and then we go into it. And after a while, we really can't tell who wrote what.
Yeah.
Because we're in sync with each other. But generally, if it comes to a conflict, and one of us says, no, it should be this, and the other says, no, it should be that, the person who brought the idea to the table in our collaboration, that's our rule, they get the final say.
At some point, democracy can be counterproductive.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. Most of the collaborative groups I've worked in, they don't have the same rule, but they all have a sort of this is the final line. Hmm. This is where someone decides, and this is how that's done.
It is
so a method.
It is Vox Pop today. Barbara Chepitis is here, along with Grace Alberti, Katie LaCour, and Padraig Bond. We talk about the writing process. If you want to give us a call, 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. And we'll talk a little bit about the writing process and getting from idea to paper to stage coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. The number is 800-348-2551. It's a writer's forum today, and a little different than some of our other writer's forums. We have Barbara Chepitis as our regular guest on this program. And I think the last time we were on, Reggie Harris was here. We talked about
Reggie songwriting.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And playwriting is something I know very little about.
Me too, oddly enough. I do a lot of performance. That's one of the things we were talking about earlier, is the difference between storytelling and acting. Right. When I perform on the stage, I'm not playing a character. I'm channeling all the events and characters through me.
Right.
And it's my job to be in contact with the audience in a real specific and firm way. And when you're acting, you know, you've got that wall. And this is supposed to be happening up here on the stage, and they're watching.
Right.
And you are a character, a person, generally. So it's very different. And I have not written what he said.
Now, that's interesting. Padraig Bond says, you know, maybe not quite so much.
Not quite. Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes there's definite conversation with the audience. It really depends on the type of work that you're writing. But mm-hmm. I find that some of my favorite theater is when there are omniscient characters that are directly communicating with the audience and with the stage that
right.
they are.
Like Our Town, like, right?
Our yeah. Town, Cabaret.
Mm-hmm. Glass Menagerie.
Yep. Yes.
And that kind of postmodern sphere, which is part of what we're influenced by for writing Trojan Women. So.
Oh, yeah?
Tell us about Trojan Women.
About Trojan Women, just as a project? Okay.
Well, yeah, about the play and about the project and how it's coming along.
Okay. Well, I was originally inspired to do it by seeing the Suzuki Company of Toga come to Skidmore College and perform their production of Trojan Women. And I learned soon after that it was the most performed play in the world. And for good reason. It can be adapted to almost any scenario where people are suffering, where people have need.
Specifically
women, and where there's need of hope. And it's been performed all over the world in many different scenarios. Mm. And I already had a great passion for Greek literature and theater and mythology. So I had thought Ad Astra would be a perfect outlet to put this play on.
And how many are in the troupe?
Our last show had, I think, 18 cast members and probably 3 or 4 people in the production. And our first show was only 13, so we're slowly growing.
And ranging in age from?
Our youngest was 12, and our oldest was 18, 19? I think 18.
Hmm. Now, I've often heard it said that to be an actor, you need some life experience, right? how do you get that at age 12?
You read.
I mean,
life experience from the rest of the world and its writers.
I think that people, even at that age, gain a certain understanding of psychology. And at least that's how I have always acted. I've always acted by what I've learned from just the reactions and motivations of the people around me. And I think that's kind of intrinsic. You can know that from whatever age, as long as you know what to pay attention to.
Yeah, I think... young people who are acting. My niece also does a lot of acting, and she's 17. They have an emotional maturity. You know, they can find and name their emotions, which oddly enough, I have a lot of college students that can't do that. You know?
I don't know, a lot of 50-year-olds.
Well, yeah, there you go. There you go.
Our number here, by the way, is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We talk writing today. It's a writer's workshop, and Barbara Chapitis is here, along with Grace Alberti, Patrick Bond, and Katie LaCour. If you have a question, feel free to give us a call. Now, Barbara, when you write novels, mm-hmm. you're not seeing it as a play. You're not seeing it as theater, are you?
I'm experiencing it visually, but it's not a play in the sense that the stage is not restricted, you know. And I think that's one of the reasons I have not written a play is because I don't understand the mechanics of it yet. You know, I write script, but when you write a script, you can do anything. You can imagine anything you want, and CGI can make it so. Mm. But for writing for stage, the constriction, the physical and mechanical conscription of that area, I think, I'm not sure how to manage that.
Well, that's interesting. Now, because when you're writing for, when you begin writing for a play, I would imagine, you're not worried about those restrictions, right? You're writing ideas and scenarios and people are involved and the effects would come later, right?
I mean, I usually... When I get an idea for a story, I don't always know if it's going to end up as a play.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I've started with an idea for a novel and then it becomes a play or vice versa. And I think that it's just I've had more success writing plays because that's the language I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily start by seeing my characters. I usually start with characters. I don't see them in a space.
Mm-hmm.
How many plays have you written? Katie.
About six.
Really?
Yeah.
And what have you learned? In other words, what has your progression been in the sophistication of your, of the process and your finished product?
Well,
first of all, is a play ever finished?
I wish I could say yes. Like I really, I wish that I could finish, but I have yet to feel satisfied with any of my plays. Yeah. Sometimes I go for like 7 months maybe and say, oh, it's done. And then I'm like, wait, no, it's
yeah,
not.
Well, that's good.
But I think recently I've really been becoming interested in kind of direct address, where a character speaks to the audience. And I've really been shifting from realism to something very theatrical in the sense that we're recognizing that we're not in real life and that we're on a stage.
Mm. Okay. That's an interesting shift.
When was the first year you wrote a play? How old were you when you wrote your first play?
I began my first real play when I was 13 or 12. Mm. I think I was 12. Before that, I like to take picture books and just like take all the dialogue and make it a script format.
Yeah. Actually, same.
But my first original play, I started when I was 12, I think.
That's amazing. Okay. I mean, that's did great. You know when you were younger than that that you had a little different bent about you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, Ray, I want you to know, I did write a play. I was in second grade.
Oh, my gosh.
I wrote the second grade Christmas play. It was about the animals all being able to talk at midnight on Christmas.
Oh, yeah?
And what they said to each other.
What did they say?
I am a dog.
Here we go.
You see, it all came back to me now.
Yes, Barbara Chapitis is here. Also, Patrick Bond, Grace Alberti, and Katie LaCour. And the three, Grace, Patrick, and Katie, are with the Ad Astra Theater Troupe. And the current production is Trojan Women, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uprising was last year?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a question for you about that. Do you tend to write from historical material generally? Is that...
It's my favorite.
Yeah?
And I think all of us are kind of...
Why?
I don't know. I mean, history has just always been, again, something I've been drawn to. It's my favorite time waster. And I just happened to come across a bunch of like-minded individuals who also waste their time with.
Well, you know what I think is really great about it? A lot of the young writers that I teach, one of their primary problems early in the in their development as a writer is plot. Figuring out the plot. And that seems to be elusive for a lot of people until they get like well into their 20s or even 30s. But if you're writing from history, there it is.
Mm-hmm. You know? Is that a crutch?
No, I don't think so.
No?
You just have to do it justice. No, no, because...
It worked for Shakespeare.
It worked for Shakespeare. And I think that a lot of what I did was working from stories. And, you know, I had such a massive amount of storytelling and, you know, folk tales, fairy tales, whatever, old tales that I had absorbed. That's what gave me the structure.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about your students and the development of plot, again, I'm not a writer, so I don't know, but it would seem to me that if you didn't have the story arc in your head, you'd never begin. I mean, wouldn't you sort of have a plot already before you first put that pen to paper?
I don't know. I also remember in second grade, I wrote a series of little comic strips about this ant and a Martian having an interaction. And at a certain point, I grew really frustrated with it because I didn't have a plot. Huh. I was like, oh, this is not a good story. And I ripped it up and threw it all out.
Interesting.
I know. I could have archived and sold it on eBay by now.
You put the Martian and the ant on a park bench. And that's your plot.
Like, yeah, I think my plot had something to do with sharing M&Ms at the time, but I'm not, you know, sure if I'm remembering that correctly.
Fascinating. I'm not surprising either. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. This is Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. It is the Writers Forum today. Barbara Chepitis is here, along with Grace Alberti, Patrick Bond, and Katie LaCour. Let's take a call. And Anthony in Cooperstown. Anthony, you're on.
Hello.
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 Hi.
Hi. My question is to anyone. I've mulled this idea for a number of years, and it has to do with, in a sense, a reenactment of the Cherry Valley Massacre, which is a very Shakespearean tragic drama. It's pretty intense in terms of the levels and interactions and so forth. But it would be in the format of Under Milkwood, if you're familiar with that, Dylan
yes.
Thomas, where individual readers get up and speak and the story unfolds by these speakers.
So what's the question?
And just some guidance, because as much as I look at the characters and think of what they might say, I'm not sure how to put it together. And it's from the perspective of a young girl who is one of the real characters who would serve as a narrator. And her fate was somewhat uncertain. There's some who believe she disappeared and never appeared again. So it's sort of the gist of the ghost of Abigail Dunlap,
so
who's the narrator.
What would you young people suggest?
Well, first off, I would ask, if it's from Under Milkwood, is this character sort of an omniscient, like, worldly person? Or is she tied down to the story that she's living in?
She's tied to the story she's living in that she would fill in the spaces between the characters who will be living the story. She was part of it early on, and then she ran off to hide and only appears one more time in the actual event and disappears again. And then there's no more trace of her. So she's sort of a non...
She's kind of like, it's interesting, she's almost like an angel, that she was part of it and was there for part of it. And now she does have a standing back, omniscient view. Is that, would you see it that way?
Yeah.
I
was seeing it kind of like a Greek chorus.
Oh, okay.
Tying the story together.
Yeah.
All the little things that you could miss, the character can fill you
in. And that does make it more like a storytelling event if you're doing that.
Yeah.
Well, Anthony, good luck. Go ahead, man. You finish it up.
I mean, in terms of, I'm just not sure what to.
I would say your best idea is to start writing what the characters say, and don't worry about the in the beginning. Don't worry about your getting it right or getting it wrong.
Yeah.
Do what's called free writing. and take each character and spend some time with each one, just letting them speak. You already have a sense of how the plot goes.
Yeah, because it's not a happy ending, let's be honest with you.
Yeah. So just let them speak through you.
Okay.
And don't worry about right or wrong.
Anthony, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Katie LaCour is here, Patrick Bond, Grace Alberti, and Barbara Chapitis. It's the Writers Forum. And we'll talk about any kind of writing you want, whether it be for the stage or for a short story or novel or even a poem book by a dog. It's
arf, arf, arf.
Now, it's funny. You mentioned free writing, Barbara, and you and I have talked about this many times.
Yeah.
One of the, well, maybe not for some, but for a lot of people who are in a creative process, self-editing too early is a very bad idea.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, they're all agreeing over here, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to be willing to, and I think as a singer, you know this too. When you're warming up, when you're just practicing, or when you're learning, you have to let it be messy. You have to allow for that and just be comfy with that.
And then how long, and I guess this was, would follow along with writing for the stage as well. How long does it take you, Barbara, to winnow the ideas down and to focus what you have done just sort of willy-nilly?
It depends on the project.
Yeah.
You know, for some reason, some, and I have no, it's a mystery why, but some of them evolve very quickly, like within a week or two even. That's like the shortest time zone. But I've had some that took years, like 3, 4, 5, up to 10 years for me to feel like I was ready to write it.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go back to the phones. Tess in Saratoga. Tess, you're on.
Hi.
why is everybody laughing? You know Tess?
She's a good friend of ours.
Yeah. Oh, hello, Tess. You're
hey,
on.
Hi, Tess.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask about like that idea of putting characters into a historically accurate scenario, and whether it's harder to take like your own personal characters and put them in that scenario, and how do you make them accessible, and what kind of compromises do you make to modern audiences?
Good question. Go for it.
Well, I think when it comes to hi Tess, when it comes to language, we. At least for Uprising, we're dealing with both a language barrier and an age or like a era barrier. And so we tried to, like at first we had a lot of weird old British slang that I don't know how it got there.
Really?
But we had to, I think through our editing processes, we took that out and it became kind of timeless. I think eventually it's definitely in a more modern context, language-wise. Character-wise, I think that it... We just wrote humans and hoped that they would exist because we assumed that humans existed similarly.
And that's not to say that we didn't ground all of the plot events in historical documentation, because all of the things that happen in Uprising are things that
actually happened.
Yes. It's just we have to, in some cases, lose the specificity of those in order to allow our fictional characters to partake in those events.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
So we definitely bridged, but it was it all still taught the story that we had to teach. But there's both the element of the theatrical story that you want to speak to with human condition and the like, as well as the historical story that you want to teach. And it's just finding the balance between the two where the education is still put forth.
My novel The Amber is historical in the sense that it traces the spiritual history of Lithuania over time. And its development. And so I've dealt with some of those issues too. And for me, one of the issues was, how do I bring this into the here and now? And for me, the way I could do that in a novel, I don't know if you can do it on the stage, because I don't know about stage, is that I had a contemporary side to it. So the chapters went back and forth between the historical material and how that was actually affecting contemporary characters who had inherited that history.
Now, if you want, Tess, thank you for the call, and I know your friends are very happy. You want to say thank you to Tess? Go ahead. Then we're going to let Tess go.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tess.
See you later.
Thank you, Tess.
When you are writing a play, in other words, when you could you take something that Barbara has written and transfer that, something that is more jumps in time and there's history involved? In other words, What steps do you have to take to transfer that to a working stage adaptation?
I mean, I think that any writing piece takes research, and so there would be several read-throughs. And if it was done through communication with the author herself, I think that that partnership would be also very valid and important.
Mm-hmm. I think when adapting something, obviously Trojan Woman starts out as a play, and we're just making a different play from it. But I think with adapting anything, you have to allow it, if it wants to take a life of its own, as long as the original source material allows you to do that. I think that's very important, because otherwise you can get stuck. And I think that's the enemy of creativity.
Interesting. Let's take a quick break here. It's the Writers Forum. 800-348-2551 is the number. Grace Alberti, Katie LaCour, and Patrick Bond are here along with Barbara Chepitis. More of your calls coming up. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Writers Forum today. Barbara Chepitis is here. Her new book, Dog Roll, is out, that she co-wrote with Ziggy Stardust, her dog. she can explain that another time. Grace Alberti, Katie LaCour, and Patrick Bond here from the Ad Astra Theater Troupe. And we're talking about many things in writing today, but specifically writing for the stage. And let's go back. Well, let's do an email, and then we'll go back to the phones. This one came in from Mark. Hello, Barbara and guests. That's you.
Hi.
My question is about digital writing. Since everyone seems to be using tablets, laptops, and the like, is it still necessary to bother with the old-fashioned method of pen and paper anymore?
Huh. Yes.
Yeah. We do both.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we do both.
I mean, when we put down our actual scripts, it's online, but when you need to channel your creativity, you have to have pen and paper ready.
Well, that's interesting. So, in other words, when you're starting with the germination of an idea, it's on paper with a pen?
It really depends.
Often.
But sometimes, yeah.
How about you, organically? Barbara?
Oh, yeah. No, I still have my little notebooks that I carry with me and the pen that I stick in my ponytail. Mm-hmm. And that's my go-to place to start. There is something neurologically about writing that happens when you write that does not happen when you keyboard.
I can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm so used to my syntax and punctuation is out the window thanks to the computers. And email and everything else.
This is interesting to hear from you, because I've been wondering if that's going to change over time as we get more and more sort of into the, you know,
I would
keyboard
hate
age.
To see the tradition go. I mean, I have the notebook thing myself. And also, your computer is, it's difficult to have access to it all the time. Mm-hmm. But you can just always grab a pen and grab paper and write down whatever you're thinking.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, like, I think everyone here generates a million ideas a day or something, and you have to catch them as they fly by.
Yep. I used 4 notebooks last year.
Yeah.
Admittedly, filled them up. I hold on to my phone quite a bit. My notes section of my iPhone is so full with random ideas that have come to me throughout the day. I do have a notebook, but I don't know. Sometimes it functions in that way, but the phone has helped a lot, and that feels bad to say because I don't want to be one of those, but I am one of those.
Now, when you get to the actual collaboration, when a work is already well along, what do you use, Google Docs or
Google
something?
Google Docs. Yes. It's very helpful because
Easy,
commenting
simple.
Feature, and it also allows you to be, because in some cases we were writing in different households at the same time at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
And there's a chat function, so we were always in communication. And it also gives you the option to see every single change that has been made in a separate section. So when we went and changed things without talking to each other.
Yeah, it gives you something to fight about, right?
Yeah. Great.
Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Let's go to George in New Jersey. George, you're on.
Hi, thank you for the program.
Thank you.
Years ago, I read and spoke with a friend of mine about this play. I was wondering, the actors and writers here, how much of the original, which he and I discussed being a feminist, one of the first, if not the first feminist, and also anti-war productions.
Oh, could I start
with
that? Well, it won't stick to the...
How much of your production involves that, obviously, contemporaneously.
Sure. I mean, the main difference is none of it will be in Greek.
Ah, well, there you go.
But we,
wise move.
We're really trying to dig into these anti-war, you know, anti-fascist, very feminist kinds of ideals. And Katie and I stay up late at night, like, talking about, like, how we want these to be best represented in the play, because that's really the meat of it, and I think why anyone would choose to try to put this play on a specific time. So we want to stay true to Euripides' message.
And in terms of structure, it's very recognizable.
Yeah.
All of the scenes. We added one scene that's not in the original, but it's all the same order and all the same characters and all the same events. We just changed the language and other things.
We also...
What other things? It is an adaptation. Other what other things?
I mean, our process of the adaptation is we just find whatever we can... grab, like a book or a video or a song or an adaptation of Trojan Women or a Greek play that we can find, and we have a big, long document of source material. Quotes we find, and just anything we can compile into what fits our message of this play. And that process has been very unique for me, but it's a rewarding one, and I think it, once you get to the condensing it part, it's very rewarding.
It's also got to be difficult to condense it.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
Deciding what to not put
yes.
in.
Yes. That's one the of toughest the most, thing for a creative
it's
person.
Toughest and one of the most important. Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, the Writers Forum. And let's go to Lolly in Saratoga.
Hey, Lolly.
Hey, Lolly.
Hi, Lolly.
Hi.
Hello. All right.
Hi.
Hello.
I just want to say I was made to call. I would not have wanted to horn in on your moment, but
did Tess make you call?
So yeah,
Lolly is involved in this.
She was. She was a co-writer. As well.
Right. I'm a co-writer of The Uprising. Right. And then I was one of the Snickering Witches as well.
Oh, nice.
I wanted to hear more about the Trojan Women play. So the other caller actually asked the question that I wanted to ask about, you know, how are you, you know, how true are you being to the original, and what kinds of changes you are making? And so maybe I was going to ask you just to talk about the kind of postmodern thing that you're doing with, you know, you're drawing on many different adaptations and translations, and how is that reflected in what you're writing now?
Oh my, she used the word postmodern, on the radio.
Nice. Yep. I know, I had to.
I have been raised.
I mean, Pato used it earlier.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I said the dirty word.
I'm going to get off the phone and just listen.
Thanks,
Lolly. Thanks, Lolly.
Appreciate it. All right, go ahead.
Lolly made me eggs this morning.
Really?
To prepare for this.
Spectacular.
It was very kind.
Were they postmodern?
Postmodern eggs. I have been raised in a very postmodern context. My dad is a member of the City Company, which is a postmodern theater troupe, and they have relations with Chuck Mee, who is a playwright who has an adaptation of Trojan Women, which is very postmodern.
Okay, define, for those uninitiated, define postmodern. We're talking to Flintstones here?
Postmodern. I mean, first off, it's a branch off from realism, and... to me, I think it means different things to anyone.
Aha.
I'm sure my dad
it's
would.
One of those,
it's so it's
those,
a nebulous term,
it's
right?
It's one of those literary terms that,
the
you know,
hipsters
you just,
use.
If you use it too much, you have to go back to, I am a dog.
I mean, to me, when it comes to postmodern theater, my thought of it is it explores theater as an art form. Like, more than the story, the tools of the theater become what's important.
Isn't navel gazing sort of not the right way to go? In other words,
I don't think it's navel gazing. I mean, it really comes around some of it, to me, is the idea of the taking a bunch of different stuff and putting it together in a different way. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to stick with one linear reality.
Ah, okay.
That's one of the ways I see it.
And I see it as an exploration of the universe of the theater. You look at the tools of the body, which is a very unique tool for theater. You look at the tools of space, where you are. You look at time. You look at emotion.
Yeah.
And you really break down theater as an art form to its core elements, and you examine what those mean in terms of performance.
There you go.
I see Katie nodding. Grace, I don't know. Are you on board with this?
Of course. Those are the basic tools of any theatrical performance.
which you have to bring into the writing when it comes to stagecraft.
Ray, I fear these children are smarter than us.
Of that, there was no doubt. This one came in via email from Aaron. My question is, was it difficult collaborating with other writers on both Uprising and Trojan Women? How difficult was it to write with someone as opposed to writing a piece on your own? And we've discussed this a little bit. Can't be easy all the time at 3 a.m. for
instance. It's really difficult.
Yep. We had definitely a bunch of conflicts, but we figured out a system. Well,
yep,
we tried to figure out a system. There are still things that we are...
It's okay, though.
It is okay. I mean, the piece... It never feels done, but it is at a point where I think it's pretty good.
How long? How many performances will the run be? Do we know?
Of Trojan Women?
Yeah.
No clue. Know? It could tour. It could not. I don't know.
Three. See, Antoinette is
three.
Oh, my
three initially.
Three initially.
Ideally, there will be more.
If somebody,
if anyone wants,
communicates
it
with us, as what that's what happened with Uprising. We had two people who came to us and said, "Hey, well, do you want to do it with us?"
Yeah.
And that was the only reason that there were how many? Seven,
maybe.
I think around
three
seven.
In June. One
seven.
In Buffalo.
Seven.
Yeah, seven productions of Uprising. We would not have been able to do that unless people had come to us.
Seven is not a huge amount for this question, but as the run goes on, the play changes,
oh,
right?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
gosh.
Yes. A lot. It was so fascinating.
Yeah.
I directed it, if that didn't come across earlier. And seeing the characters intertwine with the actors. In the initial phase, that was pretty cool. But after seeing it with 6 months having transpired with these characters and actors becoming one, basically, the piece just got so much darker and so much more complex throughout.
That's cool.
Yeah, that
process.
Is cool.
And I suppose that can be involved with like a new original work too. But
yeah.
I don't know how long, if we did a play that had already existed.
Well, but Trojan Women is still its own thing now that you have...
I just mean in another context. I'm not talking about Trojan Women.
All right, let's go back to the phones here in Marina in the Woodstock area. Marina, you're on.
Hey, thanks. I'm enjoying the show.
Thank you.
I want to ask about rewrites. I've been a poet most of my life, and, you know, one page, two pages, I'm very attached to my words, but I edit very well and blah, blah, blah. But now I'm branching off into personal essays, and I have, like, almost 7,000 words. Is it a block for me to be attached to, I mean, I'm not so attached that I can't edit. That's not my point. My basic message, is it a block for me to, like, will I have to throw out everything and start again? Is that the best way to go?
No, why would
question.
You do that to
Was
yourself?
Was that clear?
Why would you hurt yourself that way? Unless
hurt
you really
what way? Throw everything out?
Throwing everything out, yeah. I mean, unless you really...
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you, sometimes I have gotten to... Nah, I don't usually get to the end of a piece if I hate it. I just stop writing it.
But you save it.
But I save it because I might use it, cannibalize it for something else. If you've gotten to the end... Okay, we're back to that flesh-eating thing. If you've gotten to the end of this essay, then what you need to do is put it away and then bring it back and reread it and see what needs changing. If you read it again...
Yeah,
and,
that's what I... Okay.
Yeah, yeah, so you just work
that's
with it.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. I mean, if I have one of my novels is 450 pages. I was not going to throw the whole thing out when I was done. You know, you,
oh, no, yeah, I didn't mean literally. I hold on to every... page I've ever written from.
Yeah, but it's the same
when.
Process as other kinds of editing. It just takes longer because there's more words and a more sometimes, not always, a more complex interplay of structure.
Right, right.
Does
and I do
sense?
Want to change the structure. Yeah, yeah. Thanks.
Okay.
That's helpful.
Thanks, Marina. We appreciate the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. And, what a show we're having here today. We're having a great time. Patrick Bond is doing some sort of gesticulations over there.
He's dancing, I think. He's doing that.
Well, my friend's about to call.
Oh, really? Grace Alberti is here, Katie LaCour, and Barbara Chapitis. Let's go to Dave in Clifton Park. Dave, you're on.
Dave.
Hey, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, guys. It's Dave.
Yes.
How are you guys?
So mentioned. Yes, you're on.
Dave here.
Yeah. I'm enjoying the show. My Good. Question was, what is your inspiration like in general?
Pappy Van Winkle.
Everything. What do you mean? For what? For writing?
Like when you write things, what is your inspiration?
I see.
A muse comes and hits you on the head with a rock.
I think it depends on the project, Dave.
I mean, I think, I feel like I can answer that generally.
Okay, that's good.
I would say that everything that I encounter affects me in some way, and when there's enough of it, I'm driven to write.
Yeah, sure.
That's a good way of putting it. It's kind of cumulative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Barbara, I mean, there's the whole perspiration-inspiration ratio.
Yeah.
And really, you have that idea. It might come to you. I mean, you and I have often talked how these ideas sort of come from somewhere else, and they're there. But then it's up to you. And most of the work is actually focusing that and polishing
yes.
it.
Yes, and consenting to it. You know, there's a moment when some pieces, I don't know if you've found this yet or if you have, Dave, some pieces have such a big energy that you realize how much of your life it's going to take. It's going to kind of take over, and you have to say okay to that.
Yeah.
But the inspiration itself is everywhere. What the writer does is stays open to letting it in.
All right, Dave, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. Only have about a minute or so here. Joel and Delmar, you're on.
Oh, my God.
Well, I'll try. Real quick, wanted to shed a little historical perspective on the Trojan women. Very briefly, after 35, 36 years of war, the Athenians finally were defeated by Sparta and her forces, and they were planning... They occupied Athens, and they were planning on completely destroying Athens, completely tearing down the walls, burning the city, selling the people, the population into slavery, and except, of course, for the aristocrats who would go into exile in Thrace. And this was going to happen the next morning, and the victors were on the top of the Acropolis and waiting for the next morning to begin their dirty work. And a bard, a singer, came by and sang the full verse of the Trojan Women.
Okay.
And after they heard it, all of the victors were in tears, including the Spartans, and they decided to say, "Oh, the hell with it! So we won't destroy Athens. We'll just have them tear down their walls."
Well,
so that's
you.
A story that every Greek school child knows,
all
but
right.
it's not
all
as
right.
widely known.
Well, here. Thank
and
you, Joel.
Shows you the anti-war impact of right. that.
And you know, a lot of people say that before they go to Troy. Oh, the hell with it. Go to Troy. Barbara Tsipidas, how do people find out more about your new book and your project?
They can find me on Facebook, or they can visit Ziggy's page, Ziggy and Friends, on Facebook.
Grace Alberti, Patrick Bond, and Katie LaCour, how do we find out more about the Ad Astra Theater Troupe?
AdAstraTroupe.org.
Oh, okay. We have a website.
It's updated.
We also have
now.
Facebook. And
we're
Instagram.
On Instagram.
Oh,
yes,
you
we're
kids.
All over the place.
You kids on the social media. Well done, all. Thank you for being here. Support comes from Wild Bird Junction, 308 Delaware Avenue, Del Mar, offering wild bird seed, bird feeders and houses, heated bird baths and de-icers, binoculars, nature jewelry, gifts and toys, where people and nature come together. WildBirdJunction.com. Travels with Sarah. Organizing private African safaris with authentic tented camps and lodges, accompanied by Africa specialist Sarah Kearns. 845-926-4774 for more information. And Schenectady Symphony with Chime students of the Empire State Youth Orchestra, featuring Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet, conducted by Brett Weary, January 20th, 3 p.m. at Proctor's Theater, schenectadysymphony.org. Thanks again to Barbara, Grace, Patrick, and Katie for being here. Thank you for listening and for some terrific calls. Thanks to Zachary, the engineer. Thanks to Susie Checkeye for answering the phones. Our producer, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, buckle down. Set your alarm now, because at 2 p.m. tomorrow, bird expert Rich Guthrie is here. That's radio gold right there. Right now, stand by for news.